listening to Two Sons of Tatooine. If there's a bright center to the universe, you're listening to the podcast that it's farthest from. And here are your hosts, Jonathan and Nathan.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Two Sons of Tatooine. My name is Nathan. I am one of your hosts, and I am joined by Jonathan Cohen, the co-host of this podcast, of which we, of course, start Star Wars. And please follow his YouTube channel. He will give you so much great information about books. You will love it. Today, we're going to discuss the finale to The Bad Batch. This series ran for 3 seasons. The final episode, entitled The Cavalry, has arrived. This is a epic finale to the series and is written by Jennifer Corbett, directed by Brad Rao, Saul Ruiz, and Stuart Lee. And it's a supersized long episode, 47 minutes, and tons to cover. Jonathan, let's talk about the biggest thing, which is, of course, the soundtrack.
Yes.
Shall we introduce the soundtrack? Wow. What did you love about this?
I just think that, for one, you know, the Kiners, when they do animated music, they just, particularly Kevin, of course, because he's done all of it, but you know, his children have been involved. They just get how to do Star Wars music across the board. Even though, ironically, my least favorite music from them has been the live-action stuff for Ahsoka, I still think even that's pretty good. And I think that Kevin's just his ability to blend new with old, to introduce new themes, to incorporate old themes, and to take existing themes in like a series like The Bad Batch and to change them for things. He turns the Omega theme in this episode,
yes,
and he makes it a triumphant theme towards the end of the episode, and he makes it so much bigger and fuller. And like, as she grows up, the music itself grows up, and it goes from being like a soft, sweet little melody to like a triumphant, you know, welcome home music. And it's such a good soundtrack. Oh, yeah. All around. And I mean, the whole season has been great. I mean, the music rarely misses in this season, but it was particularly on point in this episode. And I mean, I've always felt this way, but I especially felt this way. If they just want to announce they're doing all the animated music for every animated show going forward, I'm like, yeah, you keep doing it. You keep doing it, Kiners. You are not running out of steam.
I'm not going to sit here and do a like technical musical analysis, but there are motifs that are quintessentially Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And some of those are even specific to a time period. I felt like, oddly enough, they were able to incorporate certain motifs that were very prequelish this episode,
yep,
as well as a bunch that were very original trilogy.
Yep.
And I kept hearing and going, ooh, it's about creating this feeling that you're in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And you do that by evoking the same types of instrumentations and textures.
Yeah.
And the same, even if it's not note for note, the types of licks and that you would expect in that soundtrack in those movies. And it's so well done here. I would probably guess that they had maybe, you know, an extra month to work on this, or certainly more time because of all of the extra work that went into it, mm-hmm, for it being the finale. They've just put in all of that stuff to make it next level. And we just have to start off by saying, I think it's probably the best part of this episode. And that's saying something, because it was a good episode. I won't spoil my ranking, but we'll say it's a good finale.
It is.
How did you go into these? Well, like, our expectations going in were, you just say they were met, they were exceeded. Were things, did they go how you thought?
This was a expectations mostly met. Nothing in here particularly felt shockingly, amazingly huge. But at the same, mm-hmm, time, it's like, yeah, they set up things, they paid off things. You know, we talk about Chekhov's gun. They paid that off. They did other things in this episode, like they there were questions that we had before, and they pretty much answered those questions. Not all the questions were answered in the way fans wanted, but they answered just about all the questions that we had regarding everything. And so they did a good job. They wrapped up Rampart's storyline. They wrapped up Nala Se's storyline. They wrapped up the CX clones storyline. They wrapped up the whole Zillow Hemlock. Beast thing. Well, that, I don't say Hemlock. I wouldn't say the Zillow Beast is wrapped up because they could use it again, but they at least used it properly. They did some stuff with Emery Carr. They did stuff with all the clones.
The ecosystem is about to get like completely overturned in that, like, a Zillow Beast, introducing that is a natural predator.
Yeah.
The Tantus is already known for wild beasts.
Yeah.
They're about to have something that they've never seen before coming around. So.
But. And so, I mean, everything, on just about every level, they did what they were supposed to with this, and nothing feels cheap. I don't think anything about this episode feels, like, unsatisfactory necessarily. It's just that nothing feels...
Oh, I have my one God, thing that's
amazing. You don't. It has none of it. Yeah.
So the CX.
Yeah.
I wanted a lot more knowledge about them. That's something that's unique to this show.
Yeah.
We're not going to get anything else about them.
Probably not.
We didn't hear, and you talked about this when we were watching it. But there's a place or two where they made some cuts.
Yeah.
It felt like, and they may have cut out some important information as far as exposition goes. These guys. Here's what we did find out that you know, that Crosshair was basically, he was part of the program and just didn't make the cut. Maybe that's because something to do with he resisted it, the training. Yeah. Or the mental control, the brainwashing. Mm-hmm. And like, it gives you a second where you're like, oh, well, he claims he's got new methods, so it may turn Crosshair evil. And we're like, no. You will not undo a season's worth of development with the whole, you know, chip motif one more time. And that is a terrible way for the season, or yeah, the series finale to go. They didn't do that. But it's still, I was wondering, okay, what are these other clones? What procedures did they undergo? What training? There wasn't any of that stuff given. Mm-hmm. But enough was given that we're like, okay, well, they're dead now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. There was someone posted a meme that said, thousands of fans cried out in sadness when their theory that Tech was alive was officially dead. That once that CX-02 was electrocuted to death, it was like, okay, it's not Tech. Which we were hopeful. We, that the Tech is alive, people. We were fighting all the way to the last episode, thinking he's got to come back now. He's got to come back. And even though I wanted him to come back because I love Tech, I respect that they, in a kids show, said, "Nah, we're keeping him dead."
Nah, I was never in that camp, but there were, yeah, there were the hopefuls. You're right.
Yeah. I liked the way that the episode started so quiet and somber and serious and letting you know something was different about this episode. It didn't have the traditional opening that the other Bad Batch episodes have quite had. And I think that does help set it apart.
Yeah. All of the shots of the planet.
Yeah.
Of just the base. Really, really cool. And they seem to... They chose, like, a lot of overhead shots. Mm-hmm. Of the base, which were kind of symmetrical, like circles. And it actually confused me, because later on they do the same thing with that island. And I was like, wait, are we back on... Wait, we're on an island. I thought this was Tantus for a second. Yeah. But there's something about, like, building cities on giant mounds of land.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. I'd say my expectations were met as well, and there wasn't a big, you know, there wasn't any earth-shaking moments. We didn't get Vader, the Emperor. Biggest thing, I guess, we Tarkin, but he's very, you know, expected. The performance of Tarkin, I consistently enjoy the voice actor, and the characterization is fine. He just served a purpose. Go ahead.
I want to bring up something with Tarkin, which is I was talking to my dad about something, and we were talking about something in the military, and he was talking about this thing that happens with, because we've had family in the military, and he was talking about the way that the military operates and the way politicians deal with military funding and the way that they will purposefully fund stuff when it's vague. But when you find out specifically what's being funded, they're like, eh, maybe we'll put that money elsewhere. And Tarkin, when he figured out where to put the money, where the money was going here, and he found out more information about it, he's like, you know what, I'm going to pull the funding from this, put it on my, you know, Stardust project. I was like, oh my goodness, this is like practical application Star Wars. This is kind of real life, you know, life imitate or art imitating life here. And so it was one of those things that it was totally believable, everything that Tarkin does, where he's calling in and he's like, you all sure you got everything under control? You got a Zillow beast over there. And then when he comes in, Hemlock's dead. He sees the opportunity. He's like, you know what? We don't need this research anymore since I know what it is. We don't need that. We're going to pull all the funding and we're going to put it over here. Like, I thought that was a very believable, very Tarkin-related thing that he would do. Very, very Machiavellian.
Would the Emperor be okay with, you know? So Tarkin's like, don't worry, you're not going to die, Emperor. We're going to protect you with the Death Star. You don't need a clone. Yes. You don't need immortality.
Oftentimes in Star Wars, the Emperor will be swayed if you have a good enough argument. Don't fund his project, fund mine. But what about what he was doing? Mine will still do that or protect you. You know, it's all about protecting the Emperor, basically, or ensuring his vision goes through, and I'll enhance your vision. I'll just do it in a different way. And we've seen that the Emperor is willing to throw people aside. I mean, he threw away Rampart like nothing, and Rampart did everything he was supposed to do. And so we see if the Emperor had been present, he probably would have been fine throwing away Hemlock's research in the same way. We'll probably see more of that research just in a different way later on.
I think so.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's the same research that's going on in Mandalorian, so yes, we're going to go back to it. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a tie-in at this different time period just establish some things about it. I feel like there's an overarching story, even through shows that are set 20 years apart.
Yep.
And that will be providing some consistency with future projects, I feel like. Hopefully, yeah, that'll help to get some of that.
And I think partially it's because of the influence of Dave now that he is, you know, he's still show running shows and writing and directing, but he also has this advisory role. That's the word, advisory. He's in this advisory role where he is, you know, looking at all the projects, TVs and movies. He's saying, let's make sure that this all works. Let's make sure we're connecting in these ways. And so he's seeing this. He's seeing the stuff in Mandalorian, and he's finding ways to, hey, y'all make sure you read each other's scripts so that you connect them.
Yeah. let's kind of talk about, I guess, some of the plot of the episode.
Yeah.
We get, you know, some good scenes early on, mm-hmm, but mainly there's just, you know, kind of moving the pieces around until we get to, I think, which is a good scene. Nala Se is kind of like looking over. She's like got a window seat as Rampart is being interrogated, mm-hmm, kind of by Hemlock. And that's kind of what establishes some of this, I guess, the scene later on. But it does not surprise me in the least. I actually feel like they did a really good job setting up Rampart,
oh, yeah,
to do what he did ultimately. Mm-hmm. I think that makes absolutely perfect sense. Absolutely. And it's what I expected, what good writing should have done.
Yes.
I actually saw people who were like, oh, I wanted Rampart to be, you know, a good guy. I thought he was on the good side now. I'm like, are you serious? No, he's one of the most racist, like, Imperials. He's an absolute, like, terrible scum.
When he sees an opportunity, he's going to seize it, and he does in this episode.
But it's interesting. He kind of really picks up on the whole, like, your research is that important? Oh, well, that's my ticket back into the good graces of the Empire. And he was close. Nala Se, if she had not stopped him, then all of that stuff survives. All of that research lives. Omega's not safe. And that's another thing I felt like I should have predicted is the whole, this is the only way that Omega can never be free is,
yeah,
mm-hmm, Hemlock's got to go down, and all of the knowledge about Omega, all of the people have to either be on our side or, like, that research has to be destroyed and nobody knows about it. That's the only way she can go free. And that's, of course, what Nala Se says right from the beginning.
Yeah. So and when Nala Se goes up to Omega and says, "Well, I have this other thing I have to do," I was like, "Okay, Nala Se's gonna die."
She gone.
It was well telegraphed in the episode. I do find it interesting from like a level that, you know, Rampart had all the pieces he needed to be able to be successful, except one, which is that he didn't know that Nala Se believed that much in her goal of protecting Omega. He didn't realize that she would give up her life for Omega. I think he thought it was just, she's just trying to help out. And so I think had he known, he would have gone about it differently. And so it's that because he misses that one piece of information, it's kind of like Thrawn. If Thrawn is missing a piece of information through no fault of his own, that's how he loses, is because if he had had that piece of information, he would do the thing that would help him win. And that's why Rampart fails here.
The vibes, so it gave me two different kinds. Yep. So now say, as she's holding the thermal detonator, there's two other scenes that it reminded me of. One of them is Spider-Man 1, the Sam Raimi, where the Green Goblin's, his glider is flying towards him with the spikes out. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh.
Oh.
Yeah. That was Rampart. It was, oh. And the other scene is not quite as much, but it still gave me, it's the Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, where he's just, his ship is blowing up around him. He's like, it's just good business.
Yep,
and then and he gets blown
that
up.
Is a good comparison.
That's what I felt like Rampart. Rampart was one of those. He was some mix of those. But if they had done more of a direct quote of one of those and played up his reaction for more, oh, this is how I die. And we got that moment bigger. Instead, it was just a panicked, like, you know, it could have been a better, a slightly better moment, but it was good.
It still worked.
I were talking about earlier before show that Echo continues to have like really good like disguise. He was completely undetectable. Nobody figured out where he was, who he was the whole time, and he was just escorting
Emery,
Dr. Emery around the whole episode, and. We talked earlier about that episode we got with Earl of Her development. Mm-hmm. That helped a lot here too.
Oh yes, the
we needed that.
We went from having no or very little Echo earlier in the season to having him a lot in this episode. To the fact that I wonder if you exclude the epilogue, I wonder if he gets the most screen time in this episode, because he got quite a bit. Between all his scenes with Emery Carr and all his scenes with Omega and his fighting sequences and stuff like that. And then, you know, with Emery, of course, you mentioned that they were built up well. She was built up well because of that episode that came out earlier that I really liked. But I liked that they made an interesting partnership. Two clones, didn't really fit in type thing. And she goes off and is working with him with Senator Chuchi at the end of the episode. And it's one of those natural things whenever this happens in a TV show, it just naturally makes people wonder, ooh, are they going to be shipped now? Are they going to end up together? I doubt it. I doubt that Echo really
brother
has...
Brother and sister.
Well, brother and sister. Well, there's clones. Eh, they're clones. It's different.
Brother and sister, Jonathan. Actually, brother and sister. Literally the same DNA. They're like
they
twins. They're like fraternal twins, almost.
That's never stopped Star like... Wars before, though.
Okay. But anyway, they will not do that.
You're sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But that doesn't mean she won't find somebody, you know.
No. But they had an
definitely
connection
can.
In the episode.
Here's one thing, and we can talk about the Game of Thrones effect, but whenever you have a finale of a series, anything's on the table.
Yes.
The possibilities are there. So the Game of Thrones effect was, oh, but it could be on any episode. You never know. Nobody's safe. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a Star Wars kids show, and so there are things that are safe. if it's not a season or a series finale, and sometimes a mid-season, these characters... They did some setup at the beginning. There's a scene where Crosshair, Hunter, and Wrecker are talking about, you know, who should go after Omega. And Crosshair is very insistent at first. And eventually they're like, no, We are going with you. We know that you're expecting to die.
Right.
But Crosshair, we're not going to let you go alone.
The foreshadowing of Crosshair dying was the strongest, not just in this episode, but throughout the season, I think. I think that that was the, I think on our bingo card, we said, if anyone's going to die in the batch, it's Crosshair.
That's what you said. Very,
that's what I said. But that's that. But because that's logically the way they set up Star Wars. For one, because it's a classic Star Wars thing to kill off your redeemed character. And two, mm-hmm. he was the one that got the most development right now. He's the one that at the moment it would feel like it would be the biggest blow to Omega as a character. And it would be an interesting dynamic for the Batch to lose him again. Like, there's a lot of reasons why Crosshair dying was the most logical, and he doesn't, and you know none of them do, but we came close.
Indeed we did, but they still felt like they might, and so the episode succeeded for a while with that.
Yeah,
the thing that kind of bothered me was the Crosshair's hand.
Yeah,
so I wanted a more definitive answer, and all we got was, well, we're going to chop it off, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Is it trauma related? Whatever. The issue was very quickly like made into a nothing. And, mm-hmm. and also there's a scene at the end where he has to use his other hand and yeah. fire with his left hand instead for the trigger. And yeah. he makes the shot and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're supposed to feel tension right there that we wouldn't feel if Crosshair's at his maximum. We're just like, well, obviously he can make this shot. This is nothing. You know, we've seen him do crazy yeah. stuff. So that, I guess, builds some tension. But I didn't understand why that, because the setup for a hand thing like that is not worth if that was the only payoff. Because it was yeah. like all season
I
long.
I do get that, yeah.
I felt like it was something that should have been more. Just small complaints. This is not a perfect finale. Maybe they had something cut that we didn't know about.
I wonder if they did that. I wonder if that was one of the things cut.
I mean, maybe like Echo gives him the hand that he had. And so like maybe he has that hand now. I mean, clearly, if you lose your hand in Star Wars, it's not the end of the world.
Nope.
Just ask Anakin. Ask Luke. Ask tons of other people who lost on. It's yeah. just a normal thing. We'll give you a robot one, and you can watch your Family Guy if you want more jokes about that. All right. Your mind just went a certain place. And the stuff with Omega and the kids. So let's yeah. talk about this. And the mean Dr. Scalder, the droid who gets reprogrammed.
Yeah.
Were you cool with all that? Was it too fast, too slow?
It just went okay? for what it needed. The last episode set it up pretty well. The last episode set up the not only the Zillow Beasts, but to set up the kids with how they were going to escape. It set up the nervousness that the other kids were going to have.
These are some of the saddest, like, low-energy kids I have ever seen.
Well, if you were, like, treated that way, yeah, you'd be low-energy and sad and depressed, too.
Maybe. But as Force-sensitives, you'd think they'd be a little resistant, but
they're kids. Yeah. The only one that's happy is the baby.
I think of, like, Boomy from Korra, Avatar: The Last Airbender. That child was so literally crazy and happy and unhinged. Have you seen that?
I have not watched Avatar: The Last Airbender.
All right. That was the sequel. But yeah. Anyway, I just thought the kids were less interesting than they could have been. So all season that was just part of it. They could have chosen to develop the kids better. Just critiques here and there.
One of the best lines came from the kids, though, in the episode, which was the, oh, now you're awake, or no, it was, oh, now you're asleep, when the Zillow Beast is breaking them out and all this havoc yes. is going on. And every parent understood that scene. Because yes. you're like, when you want them quiet, they're loud, and when you're okay with them being loud, and they're quiet, and it's like, come on.
Another light critique, and then the best line of the episode, so this was a Echo line.
Yeah. that one was also good.
We talked about this, but Echo talks. He says when Omega unleashes the Zilla Beast, he's like, "Cause it's what I would do," and we're like, "No, that's no."
He should have said what we would do regarding the batch. If he had said that, it would have worked perfectly.
Because right a few minutes later, the rest of the batch is outside. They see the Zilla Beast. They're like, "Is that Echo's or or is that Omega?" They all look at each other like, "Omega."
Right.
And that's the funniest moment of the episode. Yes,
that one was really
good. Because we're all just like, yeah, that was clearly Omega. Now, did you kind of predict that she was going to force talk to or manipulate the Beast at all? Because I know people were like, oh, she's going to pull a Ventress and she's going to control it. I'm like, nope, she's just going to let it go.
To pull back the Game of Thrones reference, I was kind of hoping we'd get to see her ride the Zillow Beast. Even though I didn't actually think that was logically going to happen. Logically, her just setting it free totally makes sense and was like, it did not bother me. But I was just like, wouldn't it have been so cool if the, you know, the scene where it just breaks Sal out of Tantis, it's on the mountain, it's screaming, and the patch is just looking up at it. What would have been so cool to see Omega just riding it, holding on? Like that, that would have been a cool visual.
Gosh. Can you imagine all the kids in their backyard trying to, like, ride in their dog and pretend it's a Zillow Beast after this episode?
Yes, that would be...
Breathe fire! And the dog's like, huff, huff. Okay, so...
We just need to, we need to,
we all did that when we were kids with Tauntauns. We were like, you know, make the Tauntaun noise.
That's what we need to do is... someone needs to do an edit where they overlap all the Zillow Beast scenes with, like, the Dracarys soundtrack from Game of Thrones.
Oh, my gosh. That's a little bit dark, but I mean, there that one Dracarys, the first one is the best.
Yes,
the
yes.
one where she reveals that she's speaking the Valyrian speaking after Vanillian. They badmouthed her,
yeah,
and then she's like, "It was my native tongue the whole time. I understand you were talking smack, and guess what? Burn,
literally."
Yeah, that was an amazing scene.
Yes.
That, yeah. It makes me kind of want to watch the show, but every time you think, I want to rewatch it, you're like, oh, but the ending.
Okay, so by the way, side note, I am in the middle of my rewatch, or not in the middle, I'm at the end. I'm in season 8 right now, and it is a strong show, even up through season 7, because the music and the visuals carry season 7, even though the writing's not that good. The music and the visuals carry it in that penultimate season. And there's even a few really excellent scenes. Season 8, first two episodes, I still, even though I know exactly what happens and I'm disappointed in it, I actually had quite a lot of fun with them. So it's kind of like, even though you are disappointed by the end, the journey is just so well worth it that I think it's still worth a rewatch. And I'm doing it because once I finish this, I'm going to go back for House of the Dragon season 1 and rewatch it. And I timed it well so that my House
Except
of Dragon...
Except for episode 4.
Yes. We do not talk about that one. But I timed it so that I will finish my House of the Dragon rewatch right when season 2 comes out in June. And then I can just pick up with that. So... It's been
yeah,
fun.
I know they were way off track, but I still think the Jaime thing, going back to Cersei, spoiler, that was to me just as bad as the crazy Daenerys, because at least the Daenerys was foreshadowed and I understood it, even though I didn't think the execution was good.
Yep.
The Jaime thing was just stupid. So stupid.
Everything about that season... This is like almost the reverse of The Bad Batch, almost. And actually, a lot of the decisions in season 8, I think, would have been the right decision if they had taken their time with it. We should have had a whole season of the White Walkers marching down and them fighting the White Walkers. It should not have been a single night battle. It should have been a multi-episode arc of them fighting the White Walkers. Then... when they're done with that, maybe at the end of season 8, we should have gotten a season 9, which is the whole season about going down to King's Landing, Daenerys going crazy because she's angry at Cersei, and you see that slow descent. Instead, it's almost like, boom, she turns evil at the end of episode 4, and in episode 5, she's burning everything down. Like, we should have gotten time. If we had gotten...
Yep.
If it was two 10-episode seasons of this, instead of one 6-episode season, I think that this would have gone down. It could have gone down as an amazing ending, but instead, it feels rushed.
I also
rushed,
think the
boring.
All of the Azura's high stuff, and I'm so sorry if everybody's like so lost listening to us. Yeah. If you do even listen, but all of the Jon Snow, the prophecies, all of that was the biggest like nothing burger,
which it shouldn't have been. But I think that they could have.
They should have used it, but they didn't. They that was the one thing that got them the job, is predicting his parentage. Mm-hmm. And then they made it into a, it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't do anything, it has no consequence on the story, absolutely nothing different about it.
And there is a scene in the first episode of the season where they're like, hey, if we marry Jon and Daenerys together, it solves all those problems, because he's part of the Targaryen dynasty. He's the key to the North. He'll be able to unite everyone, and she has the power of the dragons, and he'll check her impulses and stuff like that. And I was like, yes, that's the direction you should go. And they don't go that direction. And then he ends up north of the Wall. Okay. Yeah.
They decided to be tragic. They should have made the show like the Bad Batch. They should have made it have a happy ending.
Yes, and the Bad Batch does have the happy ending. So back to the Bad Batch.
It does. the scene with Tarkin and Hemlock, where he's like, I've got everything under control. Especially if you watch the episode twice, you're like, this is the last time that Tarkin talks to him. And the next time he shows up, Hemlock's dead. His research is destroyed. The entire base is on fire. Everything's gone. Zillabeast is loosed. All the clones are dead or freed or gone. And Hemlock is here just like, it's all under control. Trust me. I got this. That just makes it a little bit more sweet because, he does kind of get his energy up a little bit this episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him a little more. I just didn't... I didn't love the way that they kind of killed off his best buddy. Scorch deserved better. Everybody knows the scene on the bridge was, it was good for the stuff with Hemlock was good. Scorch didn't need to die that way, but
Scorch should have been much more of a final boss type thing than he was.
They'd already done the final boss with the X-Troopers.
With the which way? Scorch should have been in that arena instead.
I would have been fine if it was me. Like, I would have had the Zillabeast take out Scorch, because that's an epic way to go.
It is.
The Zillabeast shows back up and Scorch is like, oh no, oh no, oh no! You know, that could have been a way to go.
Or I would have had Echo have to be the one to take out Scorch while Hunter and Wrecker deal with Omega and Hemlock. Because maybe people would have forgotten about this, but Echo wasn't just a part of the Bad Batch. He was an ARC trooper. And so getting to see the dichotomy of an ARC trooper versus a Republic commando, that could have... If they explored that, I think that would have been really fascinating. But instead, they just went with the, oh, nope, he's dead.
I liked the speech where we get all the clones joining them.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That was great. Yeah.
Good, well-written speech. All of that was kind of earlier and everything, but that was good. The fight scene in that whole... So we've been seeing a clip or two because Hemlock's little elevator goes up to the second floor where he did all these research on the CX troopers. Mm-hmm. It's a cool designed area, and you realize as you watch the episode, you're like, okay, this is totally designed as like a almost like a military training circular thing on the bottom, because it's got like circular cover built in and everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they used training at all in there, what it was used for, but it turned out to be a great little area for a fight scene to happen. Cool. I'm sure that was when they designed it. They were thinking, oh, we'll design this for a fight scene.
And the music in that scene was really cool, because they brought back the CX theme from earlier in the season, which is that boom, 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 boom. It was a nice contrast to the other music that was used in the episode. And it's very, when you hear that music, even though it's not necessarily the most hummable song, the second you hear that music, you go, oh, this is the CX troopers. Like, that's what he's getting. Even though we knew that because of the story, it's an extra way for them to let the audience know this is what's coming up. And so I thought that they did a great job with the music there.
Let's talk about stakes.
Yeah.
The stakes of this episode, the I think the highest point they reach is when Hemlock captures Hunter and Wrecker and Crosshair. All of them are tied down. Hunter's being tortured.
Yep.
That's when you get this, like, I'm going to turn all of y'all into CX operatives. Yep. And you might, that's if you survive. And that's the moment you're like, okay, this is the most stakes it's gotten.
Yep.
Although I never really felt like that was going to happen. There was enough stuff with Crosshair. There was enough confidence that he was like, I can turn him now. It's going to work. That I was like, maybe. But actually, you know what I first thought was that kind of like the four that he had already made were each of them a parallel to one of the batch.
Yeah.
That one of them was a hunter clone that had his same ability.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that all four of these kind of had all of the Bad Batch's mutations in some form or another. And they were all super strong, super good shots, could sense energy, those type of things. But that's not exactly what we got. It was, man, if they would have, imagine if they had combined all those mutations in one. That was like, even though it was a one CX and they all had to fight four of them against one. That'd have been awesome.
So there is an old, you know, 1990s kids book from the Legends line titled Shadow Academy, where the Legends version of Han and Leia's children, Jacen and Jaina, are captured by these, you know, bad guys. And they basically, what they do is they put these visors on them that take away their sight, and they make them see incorrect things. And so they make Jacen think that he's fighting this other bad guy, and really he's actually fighting Jaina, his sister. And Jaina is wearing the visor, and she thinks she's fighting Jacen. And I'm just thinking, wouldn't it have been cool if in the brainwashing they had put the batch in that armor and stuff, and then it's like the batch thinks they're fighting the CX troopers when it's really, you know, Echo and the other clones, and then Echo and the other clones think they're fighting these CX troopers, and then they take off the helmet. It's like, that could have been a cool way to go with it, but the way they went was still pretty cool.
There was not enough time for them to do more than they did.
With the time they had, and you know, we said it's a 47-minute episode, which it's the second longest episode of the Bad Batch behind this. Behind the series premiere, which was about an hour and 16 minutes long. So that was, you know, about 91 minutes. So it was shorter than that, but it was still jam packed. And I liked that. I think it was the right length. If they had gone too much longer, it would have been like, all right, when is this ending? But instead it felt like, you know what? That was a good length for the episode.
I'm thinking like, was there anything I'm really missing that Omega herself did besides releasing the beast and kind of leading the kids out? And then
helping the Bad Batch escape from the CX, you know, from that arena, because she helps, Wrecker get out, and she kind of distracts the others a little bit in that scene.
That's right. Yep. She does like release Wrecker's bindings. Yep. That's cool. all right. Well, after everybody gets, you know, happily ever after, we're back on Pabu.
Yeah.
Back on Pabu. And they get this like brief mention of like Pantora and Senator Chuchi.
Yeah.
And that's like enough to say, okay, there's other things they're going to do, but how disappointed were you that we didn't get to see any of Rex, any of Cody? That's a big one that we thought, you know,
we still haven't seen Cody since that amazing season two episode.
Yeah. And I'm surprised. I really thought we were going to get more.
I thought Wolf was going to show up since he was teased earlier in the season.
Yeah. This season.
That was curious. That makes me wonder, will they do something else with that? Those characters. They said in an interview, I forgot who it was. I don't know if it was the Kyners or if it was Corbett or whoever. They were like, we don't have any clone specific shows planned at the moment, but with how popular and specifically well-received this season is, I cannot imagine that they're going to let this go for too long. I'm sure they have something planned animation-wise, and I'm sure we'll find out what it is eventually, but I gotta imagine they're going to go back to some of these characters or some of these ideas because they're popular, they're inexpensive to produce because they already have the models made. Of course, clones are super easy because it's just Dee Bradley Baker all over again. And of course, I think he'll keep doing Star Wars as long as they pay him. So,
well, there's a lot of people that are interested in one. How is a half-life of a clone? How is their aging?
Yeah.
You know, and the timeline that we know, how is that all going to fit together? And what is it like for a, you know, middle-aged to very, very like, the end of his like where he can actually be a fighter.
Right.
How does he handle that? And I guess Rebels deals with, you know, we've got the beards and the gray hair.
Not enough.
For an episode, but not enough, yeah. So that's something maybe we could get more of. And I definitely want to talk before, you know, we can't not talk about this best awesome, the one scene at the end. This is the scene that made me a little bit, like, emotional because as a character like Omega, I'm not going to lie. Like, everybody found her annoying, just like Ahsoka. And she grew on us. And the grown-up Omega, you know, she was sweet. She was awesome. I want to follow her in the next story.
Exactly.
I want a show that kind of, you know, let's go and watch her be a rebel now.
I agree. I want to see that.
At least, like, go and tell us the story, even if it's in a comic format.
Right. I would really prefer it to be in the TV realm because I think it would work there. Mostly because that is a thing where I think that even though Dave technically created the character, because Corbett's been, you know, show running this thing, I think that this is the type of thing where we need a spin-off series with Omega somehow and make Jennifer Corbett the sole creator of it. Don't give Dave any credits, except maybe like a producing credit, but like make it clear it's Corbett's show. That's what I think needs to happen next with Omega. And it doesn't have to be a really long show. It could be, you know, three seasons like this one was, but that's what I'm hoping.
She never, to our knowledge, trained herself in the Force. So the foreshadowing we got with Ventress was kind of, it's interesting.
I think they
left it. This is one of those few examples I can think of in Star Wars where we found out a character's Force sensitive and there's a little bit of they should. And then they don't get trained. I guess Finn would be one, but that feels like it's probably still going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Feels like that one's like more likely than Omega at this point to become trained.
It's a two-edged sword because if you find out a Force character's Force sensitive, you naturally want to see them become a Jedi because that's a pretty cool thing to see a character become a Jedi. But then at the same time, it takes away the specialness of being a Jedi and it limits the universe that, our character's Force sensitive, gotta go make him a Jedi now. It's like there's other things Force sensitive characters can do, other things they can be. And so I understand that there's a lot of people whose natural impulse is, can we just find someone who's not a Jedi or find someone who has Force powers and doesn't go that direction. So I think it's a difficult choice to make. I'm okay with either direction that they go. If they want to, I think they were vague about it. They didn't say, I never completed my training with Ventress. They don't talk about it. So if they want to include it down the line, they could in the next series, or they could say, nope, nothing ever happened. They cleverly gave themselves options.
I think about Dooku, the way that he retired.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I've always thought it's weird, but I know he had this family wealth, but I thought whenever they kind of left all of that behind that they couldn't go back to it. Mm-hmm. And he just basically got away, you know, or he resigned, and then he just got back to his old life, but he still has all of his Force knowledge. He was even stronger with obviously the dark side, but you know, Leia, it seems like, is an example of this to a degree. They tried to say she was trained, but then just decided to be politician. Thing. Well, that's fine, but it's very, very cool to have force powers, and it doesn't matter if you're just a politician. You have force powers. That's cool.
Yeah.
Show us how you're going to use the force powers as a politician. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Omega, develop a few force powers. Okay, you're just a rebel pilot, but you got some force powers. So you got an edge. You've got a little special thing, even if it's not a lot. And that can make the difference and make it just a little special and more fun. So that could be just, even if it's a little bit, I would like to see that. What about this whole, like, last scene with Hunter? Was there any, like, dialogue that you loved or maybe you thought maybe that could have been better that they missed out on? I thought it was perfect.
I thought it was worked real well. Part of me thought, aw, man, you're not joining the rebellion. Everyone's joining the rebellion. Hunter, why don't you get up and do that? And at the same time, I'm like, you know what?
He earned will.
It. He's, at the same time, I'm like, he's earned some retirement. He's been through a lot. So we'll see what they do.
He will. I would be surprised if they don't.
Yeah.
Especially with Omega gone, because she was their whole reason. And just the idea behind this family, like, they even, you know, they talk about family a couple times, you know, even before the time skip at the end. There was no bigger theme than the family of the Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. All three seasons were about, and sure, we call maybe Hunter was kind of the father, but they're all brothers and fathers to her together. She was their daughter and their sister. And the theme of them coming together and the happy ending we get, it's very healing to have that. And I think there's a good chance after she's gone that they're like, well, all right, we did a good job raising her. Let's go raise some hell. Let's go help out. That's probably what they'll, hey, all right, we're getting old. Time to go out in a blaze of glory. Let's go help the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah.
Maybe. I could see it anyway.
And it didn't matter what happened with the dialogue in that scene as much because, as I mentioned earlier, the music in that scene alone is just that good. Oh, it's I cannot wait to listen to, like, when we get the full sound. Because, like, people have uploaded, like, versions of the soundtrack so far of it. But I don't think we've gotten, like, the official season 3 drop yet from, like, Disney Vivo or whatever it's called. But once we do, I'm going to be all over that because it's just so good.
And the end credits music to me
was... Yes, the end credits was good.
Gold. I wanted to see the old Wrecker and Crosshair designs, but too bad. We got the last thought is of Tech's glasses. Yeah. And she still remembers Tech. That's bittersweet. And then she flies off. And then the season and the show... ends.
After what, like 47 episodes?
40 episodes?
47 episodes, yeah.
There's 16, 16, and 15.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
It's 32 plus 15. That's 47. 47, and I would say this one is a 9 out of 10 for me.
I was about to put it the same way. 9 out of 10.
There's a lot of, I said so many criticisms, and if it had done all those things right, it could have been maybe 9.5, 9.7 at the best, if it did all of that perfectly. But it didn't have that, like, oh my gosh, holy crap, that moment.
It didn't and have that.
There was not Luke showing up in an X-Wing to save Grogu and slice through dozens of Death Troopers. That's not going to happen, so...
But it was still satisfying. I felt good. I felt happy after finishing the episode.
It was very good.
I felt like, all right, Bad Batch is finished. I feel good about sticking with it for 3 seasons.
If Ahsoka had ended, but season 7 of, gosh, because that was so sad and so dark, the way that it ended, this was... very, very different in the way that it ended.
Yeah, I felt breathless after the season 7 of Clone Wars ended because it was just like, really? That's how it's ending? All right, then. Rebels got,
well, we knew there was more coming. We knew we had to.
Clone Wars is like the completely bitter ending. There's nothing happy about that ending. Then you have Rebels, which has some happy moments, but also some sad because Ezra gets taken away from his family and they win the battle, yay, but there's losses and stuff like that. And so it's kind of the bittersweet. And then this is the full-on sweet version. This is the happiest ending we've gotten to one of the Filoni shows.
Yeah. I wonder if they had really got on the budget, if they could have thrown in a parade and let Kevin Kiner compose either a throne room theme or a episode one parade little thing through the streets to celebrate the victory.
That would have been
it would have been fitting because Star Wars needs that type of celebration. The sequel trilogy didn't have that moment.
It had a really sweet moment where they're all hugging at the end, and that music works pretty well in that scene, but it's not on the level of episode one or episode four.
No.
But it's there by Skywalker.
Whenever we get that in animated Star Wars, if they try and do that and they do a good job, it'll be very well received. So, well, we have lots of other Star Wars to talk about because there was Tales of the Empire came out.
Yep.
But we will not talk about it today.
No.
No. Next time.
We'll talk about Tales of the Empire next episode. I don't know whether we'll do it as one or two episodes. We'll talk about that later. And then we have a new trailer for The Acolyte, which came out.
I saw that trailer. Yeah. I did see that trailer.
And then
it's
of
doing
course,
about as well as the last trailer did.
And then we have I still think it looks good. And then we have The Acolyte itself will start in June. So I thought we would squeeze in the original plan was to squeeze in maybe a music episode before Acolyte, but that was before we knew about Tales of the Empire. And so I doubt
we could probably do two. Let me just say it this way. I think we could divide them up into the Barriss episodes.
Yeah, the Barriss episodes and the Morgan episodes.
Yeah. Yep. Let's divide it up that way.
I like that. And then that's two episodes. And then we'll have an episode for the trailer, final Acolyte. And then I think Acolyte's the week after that. So, because that's 3 weeks. So,
did you celebrate May the 4th, Jonathan?
No, because you and I were on a band trip and we were busy the whole day. And I was saving my phone power because all my friends were on Twitter and posting stuff and watching stuff and doing stuff. And ordinarily, on a Saturday, on May the 4th, absolutely I'd be doing all that. But because of the trip and because of the work I was doing there, I was like, I do not have the time to do any of this. And when I got home at like 11 o'clock at night, I was tired. I didn't do anything.
6:30 to 11 work day will do that to you.
Yes, it will.
I usually wear my lightsabers. I've got, cover jet clips and wear them on my belt at work. And unfortunately, if it's on a Saturday, I can't really do that. But I have such a great tradition of like turning the lights out in the classroom, letting kids swing lightsabers around, even conducting with a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Oh, fun times. So, but I didn't get to really celebrate either. What about Revenge of the Sixth? Did you get to celebrate that? Or
I
don't celebrate the days after. You just acknowledge that the meme exists.
Yeah, I know the meme exists. Well, I'm a celebrator in that I would prefer they release a book so I could read a book on that date. That's what my natural inclination would be, but they didn't do that. They didn't do that this time.
Why didn't they?
Because of timing. No, because the next book that's coming out is a High Republic book, and they timed it to come out right when Acolyte's coming out. And the next book that comes out for Star Wars is months later. And so I understand that it's like they didn't want to push anything up too far, and they didn't want to mess with the promotion for the show. So I understand why they did it. Maybe they could have pushed John Jackson Miller's book back, because his came out early April, and maybe if it had come out early May, but it's fine. It's fine. Maybe next year.
Maybe. All right. Thanks for listening. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you have a thing.
No, I don't. I just realized in quarter one and quarter two is when they're supposed to finish the High Republic novel series. And I just realized, perfect. If they can find a way to release the final book on May the 4th next year, that would be brilliant timing. I don't know if they're planning that, but Lucasfilm, listen to me. That's a good idea.
book readers, they're like, yes. Ooh, we finally get a thing.
Yes.
Finally. We deserve a thing. Okay. So, well, throw us out, Jonathan.
You can find us on Simplecast, iHeartRadio, radio.com, Stitcher. You can find us on Facebook at Two Sons of Tatooine. You can find my YouTube channel, Jonathan Cohn. And I also do another podcast, which is Literary Treks. And, of course, other YouTube channels I pop in and out for stuff. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
And I am Nathan.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Two Sons of Tatooine.